Holly never mentioned her brother again, except once. Moreover, she stopped calling me Fred. June, July, all through the warm months, she hibernated like a winter animal who did not know spring had come and gone. Her hair darkened, she put on weight. She became rather careless about her clothes. Used to rush round to the delicatessen wearing a rain slicker and nothing underneath. Jose moved into the apartment, his name replacing Mag Wildwood's on the mailbox. Still, Holly was a good deal alone, for Jose stayed in Washington 3 days a week. During his absences, she entertained no one and seldom left the apartment, except on Thursdays, when she made her weekly trip to Ossining. Which is not to imply that she had lost interest in life. Far from it. She seemed more content, altogether happier than I'd ever seen her. A keen, sudden, un-Holly-like enthusiasm for homemaking resulted in several un-Holly-like purchases. At a Park Bernay auction, she acquired a stag-at-bay hunting tapestry and, from the William Randolph Hearst estate, a gloomy pair of Gothic easy chairs. She bought the complete modern library, shelves of classical records, innumerable Metropolitan Museum reproductions, including a statue of a Chinese cat that her own cat hated and hissed at and ultimately broke. A Waring mixer and a pressure cooker and a library of cookbooks. She spent whole Hausfrau afternoons slopping about in the sweat box of her midget kitchen.
Jose says I'm better than the colony. Really, who would have dreamed I had such a great natural talent? A month ago, I couldn't scramble eggs.
And still couldn't, for that matter. Simple dishes, steak, a proper salad, were beyond her. Instead, she fed Jose, and occasionally myself, outre soups, brandied black terrapin poured into avocado shells, Nero-ish novelties, roasted pheasant stuffed with pomegranates and persimmons, and other dubious innovations, chicken and saffron rice served with a chocolate sauce.
An East Indian classic, my dear.
Wartime sugar and cream rationing restricted her imagination when it came to sweets. Nevertheless, she once managed something called tobacco tapioca. Best not to describe it. Nor describe her attempts to master Portuguese, an ordeal as tedious to me as it was to her, for whenever I visited her, an album of linguaphone records never ceased rotating on the phonograph. Now, too, she rarely spoke a sentence that did not begin,
"After we're married," or "when we move to Rio."
Yet Jose had never suggested marriage. She admitted it.
"But after all, he knows I'm preggers." "Well, I am, darling. 6 weeks gone. I don't see why that should surprise you. It didn't me. Not un peu bit. I'm delighted. I want to have at least 9. I'm sure some of them will be rather dark. Jose has a touch of le nègre. I supposed you guessed that? Which is fine by me. What could be prettier than a quite coony baby with bright green, beautiful eyes? I wish, please don't laugh, but I wish I'd been a virgin for him, for Jose. Not that I've warmed the multitude, some people say. I don't blame the bastards for saying it. I've always thrown out such a jazzy line. Really, though, I towed it up the other night, and I've only had 11 lovers. Not counting anything that happened before I was 13, because, after all, that just doesn't count. 11. Does that make me a whore? Look at Mag Wildwood, or Honey Tucker, or Rose Ellen Ward. They've had the old clap your hand so many times it amounts to applause. Of course, I haven't anything against whores. Except this. Some of them may have an honest tongue, but they all have dishonest hearts. I mean, you can't bang the guy and cash his checks and at least not try to believe you love him. I never have. Even Benny Shacklett and all those rodents. I sort of hypnotized myself into thinking their sheer rattiness had a certain allure. Actually, except for Doc, if you want to count Doc, Jose is my first non-rat romance. Oh, he's not my idea of the absolute finito. He tells little lies, and he worries what people think, and he takes about 50 baths a day. Man ought to smell somewhat. He's too prim, too cautious to be my guy ideal. He always turns his back to get undressed, and he makes too much noise when he eats, and I don't like to see him run because there's something funny-looking about him when he runs. If I were free to choose from everybody alive, just snap my fingers and say, come here, you, I wouldn't pick Jose. Nehru, he's nearer the mark. Wendell Willkie. I'd settle for Garbo any day. Why not? A person ought to be able to marry men or women, or... Listen, if you came to me and said you wanted to hitch up with Man o' War, I'd respect your feeling. No, I'm serious. Love should be allowed. I'm all for it. Now that I've got a pretty good idea what it is, because I do love Jose. I'd stop smoking if he asked me to. He's friendly. He can laugh me out of the mean reds, only I don't have them much anymore, except sometimes. And even then, they're not so hideola that I gulp second all or have to haul myself to Tiffany's. I take his suit to the cleaner or stuff some mushrooms and I feel fine. Just great. Another thing, I've thrown away my horoscopes. I must have spent a dollar on every goddamn star in the goddamn planetarium. It's a bore, but the answer is good things only happen to you if you're good. Good? Honest is more what I mean. Not law-type honest. I'd rob a grave. I'd steal 2 bits off a dead man's eyes if I thought it would contribute to the day's enjoyment. But unto thyself-type honest. Be anything but a coward, a pretender, an emotional crook, a whore. I'd rather have cancer than a dishonest heart, which isn't being pious, just practical. Cancer may cool you, but the other's sure to. Oh, screw it, Cookie. Hand me my guitar, and I'll sing you a fada in the most perfect Portuguese. Those final weeks, spanning end of summer and the beginning of another autumn, are blurred in memory. Perhaps because our understanding of each other had reached that sweet depth where two people communicate more often in silence than in words. An affectionate quietness replaces the tensions, the unrelaxed chatter and chasing about that produce a friendship's more showy, more, in the surface sense, dramatic moments. Frequently, when he was out of town, I developed hostile attitudes toward him and seldom used his name. We spent entire evenings together, during which we exchanged less than 100 words. Once, we walked all the way to Chinatown, ate a chow mein supper, bought some paper lanterns and stole a box of joss sticks, then moseyed across the Brooklyn Bridge, and on the bridge, as we watched seaward-moving ships pass between the cliffs of burning skyline, she said, "Years from now, years and years, one of those ships will bring me back, me and my 9 Brazilian brats, because, yes, they must see this, these lights, the river. I love New York, even though it isn't mine, the way something has to be, a tree or a street or a house, something, anyway, that belongs to me because I belong to it." And I said, "Do shut up," for I felt infuriatingly left out. A tugboat in dry dock, while she, glittery voyager of secure destination, steamed down the harbor with whistles whistling and confetti in the air. So the days, the last days, blow about in memory, hazy, autumnal, all alike as leaves, until a day unlike any other I've lived.